righty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily Daily Caller Podcast for the 16th of September, 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. I thank you for listening, spreading the word, sharing on social media, telling a friend. I love getting the emails from people who are like, oh, my sister turned me on to the program, or as long as I end that sentence with the program, I guess it's good, because if your sister turns you on, anyway, I love hearing how you guys found the show. I don't know why that occurred to me. I'm watching this Comedy Central roast of Alec Baldwin. Maybe that's why. But I appreciate the emails telling me how you found the show, how you discovered the show, and how you're spreading the word. So thank you for that. And if you want to enter to win the signed book, from a lot of positive feedback from the Michelle Malkin interview, so thank you for that. And if you want to get your hands on a copy of her book, her brand stinking new book, which is burning up the charts, and you want a signed edition, all you got to do is email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Let me know that is what you want, preferably in the subject line. And you can write whatever you want in the body of the text. It doesn't matter. You're not going to bribe me or fix me. It's the luck of the draw. But at least I know what I'm looking for. I answered most of the emails this weekend, and then I got a bunch more on Sunday night, which I haven't gotten to. And if you previously won a signed book in the last 3 weeks, I went to the post office. I guess it was Friday. It was Friday or Saturday. I think it was Friday. So they are in the mail to you. So fear not. They are on their way as fast as the Pony Express can get them to you. You can email that same address, Derek at Daily Caller, to complain about whatever you got. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. The New York Times is really, while there was a big, I wake up and I see impeach Kavanaugh everywhere and all the Democratic candidates. And we got to impeach Brett Kavanaugh. This is an outrage. New allegations against Brett Kavanaugh. He lied. He did this. He did that. And then by the end of the night, and it's currently 1:22 in the morning as I record this, and there's been a major, major update to the story from the New York Times. We will get to that. We will get to Joe Biden talking about knife fighting. I swear to God, is he like a member of the Outsiders? I don't know what the hell's going on with this story and why he decided to tell it, but he did. And he did it in front of cameras, and we have it, and it's really, really bizarre. But first, I got to tell you about our great sponsor, Life Change Tea. It is a game changer. Since I've been drinking Life Change Tea, I've noticed I feel so much better. I can't tell you how much more energy I have. Chasing around two kids every day can take it out of you. Life Change Tea puts it back in you. How does it work? Life Change Tea is a proprietary herbal formula. It's a gentle daily cleanse designed to rid your body of harmful intruders. Let's face it, our food was different 60 years ago. It wasn't all this processed crap. It was nourishing and healthy for your body. Today, not so much. It's got pesticides, herbicides, heavy, heavy processing. They're depleting the nutrition from our food. It's no wonder you feel run down. Your insides are coated with this stuff. Life Change Tea. It's the tea that makes you go. It gets it out of you. Use as directed. Do not take it all at once. You make a gallon of it. You brew up a gallon of it. You drink what they tell you to drink every day. Just one drink of it, and you will be well on your way. I get emails from you guys going, "Ooh, man, I'm glad you gave me the warning." And yes, I feel so much better now. Try it for yourself. Go to getthetea.com. That's getthetea.com. Get ready for more energy. I drink it every day. Life Change Tea is not available in stores. Go to getthetea.com today. Check it out. Give it a shot. It'll do you good. And enter the promo code Derek at checkout, D-E-R-E-K, and you get free shipping. Thank you to Life Change Tea. Thank you for listening and trying Life Change Tea and spreading the word about that. It's great. It's great that they're sticking with us. And it's all because of you. Okay. New York Times. You wake up in the morning on Sunday and you think, okay, it's kind of a slow day. What are you going to talk about on the show today? Then you check the Twitter machine and you see all this liberal outrage about Brett Kavanaugh. And you think, what? Did I go back in time? And then you start scrambling. Do I remember any of the lottery numbers that won? Because, you know, that'd be pretty sweet if I went back in time like a year or whatever. Whatever. It seems like it was a year ago. Nope. And it's this new story in the New York Times by two so-called reporters, Robin Pogrebin. I don't know. I have dyslexia and I'm horrible with names, but it's Pogrebin and Kate Kelly. See, that name, I am 97.3% positive I pronounced Kate Kelly properly. They are reporters with the New York Times, so you know they're legitimate. They're totally for sure for serious people. Robin is a reporter at the Culture Desk. She covers cultural institutions, the art world, architecture, and other subjects, which when you're thinking about palace intrigue and Supreme Court confirmations, you definitely want somebody who covers architecture on the case. And Kate Kelly covers Wall Street, its political influence and inner workings. So again, people with deep understanding of the courts and no, I'm just kidding. They are unrelated, but they managed to finagle their position at the New York Times into a book deal that is now selling gangbusters to liberals. And to help push it up the pre-sale Amazon charts, they had this piece in the New York Times, the headline, "Brett Kavanaugh fit in with the privileged kids. She did not." You think, oh no, what's going on? Who is this poor woman who didn't fit in with the privileged kids? Shouldn't you not want to fit in the privileged kids? Isn't that the new narrative, the new world? The subheadline, "Deborah Ramirez's label experience, or Yale experience, says much about the college's efforts to diversify its student body in the 1980s. And already you're starting to think that this story is crap. And then it goes through about what a hard scramble life Deborah Ramirez had growing up. Shoo, man, she had the grades to get into Yale in 1983, but she wasn't prepared for what she'd find there. A top student in southwestern Connecticut. I love that. Connecticut's not very big. So, you know, the South, you have to put it in Southwest, not the South, not the West, but the Southwest. How many different ways do you have to cut up Connecticut to qualify as a top student? She was raised Catholic and had a sheltered upbringing. In the summer, she worked at Carvel dishing ice cream, commuting in the $500 car she'd bought with babysitting earnings. Now, until I bought my Mini in 2012, the most I'd ever paid for a car was $1,500. It was the only car I'd ever actually resold. The rest of them, I had four or five other cars. They all ended up going to the junkyard because they were pieces of junk. They fell apart. And I'd paid $400 or less for all the rest of them. They were 10, 20 years old, pieces of garbage, and I rode them into the ground. So in early 80s money, $500 car isn't all that bad. I mean, it's not a Jaguar, it's not a Porsche, you're not buying a Ferrari or anything, but it's not that bad. It seems like a fortune to me in the mid-90s. You know, $500, oh my God, if I only had that kind of money to spend on a car. Anyway, at Yale, she encountered students from more worldly backgrounds. Many were affluent and had attended elite private high schools. They also had experience with drinking and sexual behavior that Miss Ramirez, who had not intended to be intimate with a man until her wedding night, lacked. Now, I love that. She had not intended to be intimate until her wedding night. They don't say whether she, you know, crossed that finish line, shall we say, if that's when they broke the tape running across the finish line, but they want to set the table up as she's just this doe caught in the headlights of the car of life, and she was just, the straw was still sticking out of the collar because she just fell off the turnip truck. She had no idea what was going on. She didn't know that sex even existed, which is garbage. It was the 1980s, not the 1910s. And even back then, hell, people always knew. During the winter of her freshman year, a drunken dormitory party unsettled her deeply, the Times continued. Now we're four paragraphs in, and finally we're getting to the point of this article. She and some classmates had been drinking heavily. Now wait, she's a freshman? She's sweet, sweet, innocent, doe-eyed, never did nothing to nobody, didn't know about the birds and the bees and the flowers and the trees and nothing about it. But after a couple of months, or if even, yeah, at Yale, she's doing shots or whatever, getting hammered underage at a party at Yale. And we're supposed to believe that, you know, this was her first foray into any sort of adult behavior and breaking of the law. And she felt dirty about it afterwards and needed to take a shower. She had been drinking heavily when, she says, a freshman named Brett Kavanaugh pulled down his pants and thrust his penis at her, prompting her to swat it away and inadvertently touch it. Some of the onlookers who, I love how she treats it like a, it's like a bee that got into a car. Like, oh, get away, get away. Some of the onlookers who had been passing around a fake penis earlier in the evening laughed. Well, it doesn't, it may, I never really regretted not going to an Ivy League school, mostly because I wouldn't have gotten into an Ivy League school, and also I wouldn't want to be $250,000 in student debt for having gone to an Ivy League school. But knowing that this is how they party, wow, I missed out. We all missed out. Who goes to a party going, hey, you grab the breath mints, make sure you bring the pot pipe, and don't forget the fake penis we've got laying around the apartment. We're going to a party, and what party is complete without a fake, presumably, rubber penis at it? Back to the New York Times bombshell story. To Miss Ramirez, it wasn't funny at all. It was the nadir of her first year, when she often felt insufficiently rich. Insufficiently rich. Which is code for she was, you know, she came from good money, but not Yale money. That's like her saying, I know somebody who's very wealthy, who went to boarding school, who, you know, did all this, and they tried to convince me once that they didn't grow up rich. And I look at them, and just like, I'm not buying it. And they said, no, I wasn't. There were people who were way richer than me. And I said, you might have been the poorest kid at your boarding school, but that is by no stretch of the imagination mean that you're poor, okay? Just because your family's wealth only has 8 zeros and everybody else has 9 or 10 zeros doesn't mean you're poor. I mean, everything is relative, but when you try and pass yourself off as, I didn't grow up rich, I didn't grow up, you did. You just get, come to terms with it. But this is how Ms. Ramirez describes herself. It was the nadir of her first year when she often felt insufficiently rich, experienced, or savvy to mingle with her more privileged classmates. Again, more privileged. Means that she's plenty privileged. She just wasn't privileged enough. But the New York Times is taking yoga lessons to try and paint her as somebody wearing a potato sack on campus, having to sign her books out from the library because she couldn't possibly afford them, which is a trick I did in college. Once I found out that most of the books were in the library, I signed them out. I bought like 5 books in college. The ones I absolutely needed, like workbooks for German language class, but the rest of them, I either went without them because they were too expensive, or I signed them out from the library. I just took copious notes. Once I write something down, I tend to remember it. Quote, Miss Ramirez, I had gone through high school. I'm the good girl. And now in one evening, that is all ripped away, she said in an interview earlier this year in her Boulder, Colorado home. By preying upon her in this way, she added, Mr. Kavanaugh and his friends, quote, make it clear I'm not smart. Well, I don't buy that somebody's whipping their dick out at a party at Yale. I don't buy that anybody's whipping their dick out at a party at Yale, and it isn't a massive problem even back in the mid-80s. I'm just not buying it. But to then superimpose all of this thing, I'm the good girl, and now in one evening it was all ripped away, as if a wave rippled across the campus of Yale. Did you know that that girl over there she swatted a penis away from being thrust in her face. Oh my God, what a dirty whore. How on earth, on what planet, is that a blow to your reputation? Is your good girl status ripped away because at a drunken party, someone is alleged to have exposed themselves at you and thrust it at them in a crowded room, by the way. This wasn't, you know, during 7 minutes in heaven in the closet while they're playing records on Joe Biden's record player. This is in full view of everybody at the party. So I think she's a little bit melodramatic, don't you think? Ms. Ramirez's story would seem far less damaging to Mr. Kavanaugh's reputation than those of Dr. Ford, who claimed that he pinned her to a bed, groped her, and tried to remove her clothes while covering her mouth. Yes, a story, by the way, that nobody corroborated. Her good friend at the time did not corroborate her story. That was her witness. That was who she said she went to the party with. And nothing. She didn't remember it. Leland Kaiser. Remember that name? Leland Kaiser. She was the one that Blase Ford said she went to that party with and left at that party. Remember, she stormed out of that party. Oh my goodness, somebody just tried to violate me at this party. I must go. And then she doesn't know how she got home. She doesn't know where the party was. She doesn't remember anything. And no friend at all ever came up to her and said, hey, what the hell did you leave me at that party with those rapists for? Because it didn't happen. Leland Kaiser was her alleged corroborator. And by the way, in the book, not in the New York Times piece, but in this book that these two hacks have put out or are putting out, they write, quote, just at the very end of the book, by the way, quote, we spoke multiple times to Kaiser, who also said she didn't recall that get-together or any others like it. In fact, she challenged Ford's accuracy, saying, quote, I don't have any confidence in the story, end quote. That is from the book that they are now using the parts of this story to try and sell. They're using it parts in the New York Times. This is very relevant to what's coming up because there's a twist. It's like an M. Night Shyamalan movie from hell. It keeps just coming back and coming back. And like, dude, we get it. All right, just stop making movies. It's over. But they go on to detail all these horrible things that this girl suffered through while at Yale. All the things that being an upper middle class or lower upper class person didn't afford her relative to her super wealthy students. I'm sorry, I just don't have any sympathy for anybody who goes to Yale. She goes on to talk about how seeing that penis her freshman year ruined her life, so on and so forth, blah, blah, blah. And you read the whole story, and I read the story yesterday morning, and I thought, huh, it seems like there's some more information that is missing from this article. But it had already gone to print. It had already been online all day. It had already made the rounds. Literally every presidential candidate said Brett Kavanaugh needs to be impeached. This is an outrage. How dare they? And unfortunately for the New York Times, they left out some interesting information. This from the Daily Caller. The New York Times left out exculpatory evidence in relaying a story about Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh's time as an undergraduate student at Yale University. Times reporters, blah, 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 their new book, there's the title. If you want to know what the title is, look it up. They report and they quote the New York Times. By the way, this all comes from one source, really, in the New York Times, this new allegation, because the Ramirez story was known at the time, and it was found not to be credible by the FBI. The woman's, oh my God, he whipped his dick out at a party, and I swatted it away. Oh no! Yeah, even if it were, which is absurd, and it would seem like some people would remember that, and I doubt that it would ruin her reputation. It was known at the time and well covered, which, again, if you're trying to release an excerpt from your book, trying to get some buzz for your book, you should put information out there that has not been previously known before. Yet everything that they reported, except this one little tidbit of information, had been known before. But what was weird is this tidbit of information I'm about to read to you isn't in the headline. It isn't in the subheadline. Now, if you're trying to sell your book, you don't say, and we rehash everything you already know, but with the new take on it or whatever. You say, here is the big thing we just found out. And you want people to buy your book to read the rest of it, or read how you found it out, or get more details. Or maybe you want to make them think that, oh, if they're telling you this, there must be more in there, so I must buy the book to find out for myself. That's how you market not just books, but everything. Okay, back to the piece in the New York Times. Quote, a classmate, Max Steyer, saw Mr. Kavanaugh with his pants down at a different drunken dorm party where friends pushed his penis into the hand of a female student. Mr. Steyer, who runs a nonprofit organization in Washington, notified senators and the FBI about his account, but the FBI did not investigate, and Mr. Steyer has declined to discuss it publicly. However, that they were the two so-called reporters added that they corroborated the story with two officials who have communicated with Mr. Steyer. So I'm not really sure how you can corroborate a story with two people who weren't there. Max Steyer, by the way, is a liberal activist here in Washington, D.C. Again, a bit of information that the New York Times left out. Also left out, originally anyway, in the New York Times article, was that the alleged victim, the woman who somehow, I don't know how you thrust somebody else's penis into somebody's hand. Let me just read that again and see if you can figure out how this works logistically. Quote, a classmate, Max Steyer, saw Mr. Kavanaugh with his pants down at a different drunken dorm party where his friends pushed his penis into the hand of a female student. Now, trying to imagine the logistics of that. I have a lot of guy friends, never drop trowel around them, but were I to have dropped trowel around them at a party back when I was single and we were all drunk, I don't think any of them would be grabbing my penis to try and thrust it in any direction at all. That's just me. Maybe my relationship with my guy friends is not as close as I think it is. Now that I think about it, I have to be glad that we're not that close of friends. But again, I don't understand how that would work logistically unless Brett Kavanaugh is packing an 8-foot python in his pants. Hey man, I don't even have a left leg. That's all just me. Don't get me excited, because then I can't stand, because I'm all tilty. So it doesn't make any sense, yet it was reported unquestioned in this New York Times piece. That was the bombshell bit of information that blew up everywhere and had Democrats across the party, across the country, calling for the impeachment of Brett Kavanaugh. This new allegation that a liberal activist somehow remembers that a guy dropped trowel at a party, we're going on 35, 37 years ago now, and somehow had a team of friends thrust his penis into a woman's hand. But there's a slight problem. It's actually in the book, but it somehow didn't make it into the New York Times. The so-called victim, the alleged victim of the secondhand drive-by penis thrusting, or whatever you want to call it, she has no recollection of it. Now, maybe you handle a lot of penises in your life and you just can't, they all blur together, I don't know. But I would think that at a party, you're at a party, you're minding your own business, some guy drops trowel, and his friends shove his penis into your hand, not the other way around, which would seem logistically possible, but that's not the way they described it. I would think that would stick out in your head. Just, you know, call me crazy. You're just standing there, and then the next thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire, and you got a dick in your hand. That's probably, it wouldn't scar you necessarily, but you'd probably recall that. yet the alleged victim has no memory of it happening. None whatsoever. They left that out of the New York Times piece. Now, how do you leave that out? How do you get the account of some guy who says he was at a party back in 1983 or 84 that saw this happen? No one else at the party saw this happen, apparently. The only two corroborating people you spoke to were not there. They were told during the Kavanaugh hearings by the liberal activist who has every reason on earth to hate Brett Kavanaugh. Yet they didn't bother to add in a line about, oh, hey, wait a second, I don't remember a dick being shoved in my hand. Well, after this article, without mentioning that, had appeared in the New York Times and online all day by, it must have been like a 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night, the New York Times actually updated their story. There's an editor's note now down at the very bottom of the article, not at the top of the article, and not appearing in print. See, because this thing's already gone. It's done its damage. They can now put it out of its misery. They say, quote, an earlier version of this article, which was adapted from a forthcoming book, did not include one element of the book's account regarding an assertion by a Yale classmate that friends of Brett Kavanaugh pushed his penis into the hand of a female student at a drunken dorm party. I love that description. I'm never going to get enough of that description. The book reports that the female student declined to be interviewed, and friends say that she does not recall the incident. That information has been added to the article. Kind of important information to just be thrust in at an editor's note long after this piece had its shelf life was over. All the people that were going to read this read this story yesterday. All the liberals prepared to post it all over social media. They'd done it. It was shared on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram by then, by everybody who was going to share it. And they all added their 2-cent commentary going, oh my goodness, can you believe that Brett Kavanaugh is apparently running around Yale shoving his wiener into everybody's hand? What the hell is going on with this guy? We need to get him off the Supreme Court. And that, in fact, is why all the Democrats called for Brett Kavanaugh to be impeached and removed from the Supreme Court. He lied, they said. He lied. Now, it's kind of funny because the woman, is the alleged victim here, is not making the allegation. It is this liberal activist named Max Steyer. The woman denies that it happened. She had no memory of it. Doesn't know what the hell these people are talking about. Now, the people who are calling for impeachment based on this are the people who insist that we believe all women, right? You must believe all women. Then why aren't they believing this woman? She says it didn't happen. She's not saying it didn't happen. But again, if somebody shoved a dick in your hand, if somebody shoves a $10 bill in your hand, if somebody shoves a drink in your hand or a pile of steaming pile of crap in your hand, something unexpected at a party in public, you would likely remember it. She has no memory of this whatsoever. She wouldn't talk to the reporters. She didn't feel like it was worth justifying talking to these two hacks who work for the New York Times. So why then would not these Democrats who are calling for the impeachment of Brett Kavanaugh, why would they not believe all women? What's going on there? Well, it's of course a matter of convenience. It's political convenience. It is the narrative. Brett Kavanaugh is a pervert. We can get him. Brett Kavanaugh lied. So let's go after Brett Kavanaugh. He must be destroyed. This is the problem. Let's go get him. Oh, wait, it didn't happen, or there's no proof or less proof. It doesn't matter. They don't care. They want him gone. The Supreme Court, the courts in this country are the one branch of government the left is going to have the hardest time taking over. It is all, I mean, they can take over the White House. They can take over the Senate. They can change the rules in the Senate. So you think, oh, well, Democrats have control of the Senate. It's 51-49. So we still have the filibuster. So there's at least some chance to slow down this blind rush into socialism. Hell no, they're going to get rid of the filibuster. Don't have any doubt about that. They want to get rid of, they've already said, many of them have said as much. So the courts are the last chance, the last defense. So the left has to delegitimize the courts. That's a bunch of right-wing hacks who shouldn't be there. They're perverts. They're monsters. They're sexual harassers. They're people who walk around parties and shove their penises in people's hands. It's not really going to take in this case. But thanks to the bogus New York Times story that, by the way, the two people who wrote that New York Times story wrote the book. They knew this information. For some reason, they decided to leave that little tidbit of information out of their story. The editors of the New York Times, who are also colleagues of these two reporters, in theory would have had access to the book as well. Molly Hemingway over at the Federalist had an advanced copy of it. One would think that the New York Times editors would as well. None of them thought to add that information. Yet it does appear to have been known. Because as I said, this was the bombshell. The Ramirez story was known. It was discounted. It was blown up. Nobody remembered this story at this party. There weren't witnesses. Conflicting reports, everything, so on and so forth. And her idea that my reputation was ruined as a sweet, sweet girl because somebody thrust a penis at me. And it's ridiculous. That was all known. The bombshell in this is that there was another event at Yale, where Brett Kavanaugh's friends apparently flung his penis over their shoulder and thrust it into the hand of an unsuspecting woman. Yet that fact, that allegation, was not in the headline, and it was not in the subheadline. It wasn't in the story until near the end, just kind of casually mentioned. It wasn't fleshed out. If you can forgive that metaphor. It wasn't really the point of it. It's weird. Unless and until you realize that this isn't about facts. This is about smearing Brett Kavanaugh. The New York Times story has been updated. The paragraph that I just read you now says, we uncovered a previously unreported story about Mr. Kavanaugh in his freshman year that echoes Ms. Ramirez's allegation. A classmate, Max Steyer, saw Mr. Kavanaugh with his pants down at a different drunken party where friends pushed his penis into the hand of a female student. Mr. Steyer, who runs a nonprofit organization in Washington, notified senators and the FBI about his account, but the FBI did not investigate, and Mr. Steyer has declined to discuss it publicly. We corroborated the story with two officials who have communicated with Mr. Steyer. The female student declined to be interviewed, and friends say she does not recall the episode. It took them almost 24 hours to add that little bit of information, the extra information there, that she doesn't remember this, she doesn't want to talk about it, you're full of crap, go away. That was the bombshell. Yet, it wasn't the thrust, again, the point, there's no good analogy, it wasn't the purpose of this article. It was just a casual throwaway. And upon that, all the Democrats seized. He must be impeached. It is an outrage. Look at what he has done. Kamala Harris tweeted, quote, I sat through those I sat through those hearings. Brett Kavanaugh lied to the U.S. Senate and, most importantly, to the American people. He was put on the court through a sham process, and his place on the court is an insult to the pursuit of truth and justice. He must be impeached. Bernie Sanders, Supreme Court justices are not above the law. Someone who sits in judgment over the nation should have the highest integrity. The Supreme Court does not sit in judgment over the nation, Bernie. You fascist. Your fascism is showing, Bernie. He continues, the revelations today confirm what we already knew. During his hearing, Kavanaugh faced credible accusations and likely lied to Congress. I support any appropriate constitutional mechanism to hold him accountable. Elizabeth Warren. No, she didn't write that in her tweet. It is the subtext of it, though. She said, last year, the Kavanaugh nomination was rammed through the Senate without a thorough investigation of the allegations against him. Confirmation is not exoneration, and these newest revelations are disturbing. Like the man who appointed him, Kavanaugh should be impeached. Beto said something even dumber than that. All based on a bogus story where the most relevant bit of information was omitted for a day. The damage was done. Then the New York Times could come in and say, oopsie, my bad, and then issue this correction, which is how the liberal media works. Report first, clarify later, the damage is done. Everything related to the Russia story, the Russian election interference story, was reported this way. It was a foregone conclusion that Donald Trump was only elected president because of Russian interference. It just had to be so. Then the Mueller report comes out, and it wasn't so. And it doesn't matter. Even if these liberal anchors/activists start acknowledging that fact that Robert Mueller found nothing whatsoever, in the minds of so many people, and in the minds of some ungodly percentage of Democrats, the election was literally stolen. 64% of Democrats, I believe it was, believe that actual physical votes were changed, which is an allegation that nobody's actually made. They've heard the lie so many times that it is the truth to them. And there is no amount of walk back or new evidence that's going to change that. That's the power of indoctrination. Rachel Maddow could come out and just say, I have made this whole thing up. I've been lying to you for the past 5 years about everything just to see how long I could go. This has been the greatest piece of performance art ever. And there will be people out there who would never buy it, never accept it, just cannot believe it, will not believe it. They know in their gut that they hate somebody and therefore they must be evil. The other side, their side, of course, is not evil. It's nothing but the purest of intentions. Although it sure seems to me that this is a good test case for my theory there. I don't see any of these Democrats walking back their calls for impeachment, because who's going to ask them? Who's going to ask them? And what are they going to say? If there's a conservative reporter out there who bothers to go up to a Beto or a Harris or a Sanders or a Warren and say, hey, you called for impeachment of Brett Kavanaugh yesterday on something that the alleged victim says didn't happen, has no memory of it. You say believe all women. Why don't you believe her and that this didn't happen, and maybe take back that call for impeachment? They won't be asked that, even if they come back and say, well, screw it, I don't care. It'll score me some points in the Democratic primary. A completely honest answer. I'm doing this purely for political reasons. I don't really give a damn about the truth. I'm not interested in it. There will be no follow-ups. That answer would not be reported in the pages of the New York Times or the Washington Post or any of the cable networks out there aside from Fox News. So when you are insulated from any consequences from your lies, from the misinformation that you spread, why would you ever stop doing it? Why would you ever stop doing it? All we've got is another, 15 months before the next election. This is this early this is happening. I'm afraid to say you ain't seen nothing yet. They are only going to get crazier and crazier and crazier. They can't help themselves because they're insane. And it's with that in mind that I welcome a new sponsor. It's a test sponsor. It's the Trump Make America Great Again Committee. Every day, President Trump is facing unprecedented obstruction and harassment from the liberal mob and their fake news allies. He's been exonerated twice, and they're still calling for his impeachment because they know Congress is their last hope. He needs your support now more than ever. Text DAILY, D-A-I-L-Y, to 88022 and receive official Trump alerts directly to your phone. You'll gain access to exclusive 2020 updates directly from President Trump himself. Be the first to know when new Trump merchandise is available. You'll even be able to give your input on key issues to help shape the 2020 campaign. All you have to do is text DAILY to 88022. It helps the show too. They'll stick around. The more you text them, the more they'll stick around. While Democrats and the fake news media have spent the last 2 years focused on a bogus witch hunts, President Trump has been working around the clock to make America great again. Make sure you're getting the news directly from the source by texting DAILY to 88022. Again, be sure to text DAILY to 88022 today. This is paid for by the Trump Make America Great Again Committee, a joint fundraising committee authorized and composed of Donald J. Trump for President Incorporated and the Republican National Committee that is dedicated to making America great again. We welcome them. They're doing a little test run, so they might stick around, hopefully, if you guys start texting them at 88022. Text DAILY. Just one word. Don't anything more than that. Then it'll come back to you. Then you can go on from there. But to get it started, you text DAILY to 88022. All righty. Speaking of DAILY and DAILY insanity, Sniffy Uncle Joe. I don't know what in the hell has gotten into him. It's nice. Joe Biden's problem is he's believing the press about him losing his mind does seem to be true. Anybody remember 2008? Cast your mind back to 2008. The Republican nominee was an elderly man named John McCain, senator from Arizona. He was getting up there in age. He'd had a couple of bouts with skin cancer, but they'd all been taken care of. And he'd become the nominee of the Republican Party. As the election commenced, there was this push, subtle but deliberate, about John McCain's age. You probably remember stories about, should John McCain announce that he will only serve one term? That was the way they put it. Would that assure voters that are worried about his health that, he will only serve one term, so he shouldn't, don't worry about him dying in office. Don't worry about him losing his mind while in office. He won't be around that long. Let's make sure that he comes out and says that he'll only serve one term, and then the American public's mind will be put at ease. Have you heard a single story related to Joe Biden with that in mind? In 2008, John McCain was 72 years old. In 2019, Joe Biden is 76 years old. This November, he will turn 77 years old. Yet there is no wild speculation or push by the media, subtle or otherwise, that maybe Joe Biden should, to alleviate the worries of the American public about him losing his mind, perhaps he should just tell everybody that he will only serve one term. Because when Joe Biden takes office, should he, God forbid, win in 2020, he will be older than Ronald Reagan was when Ronald Reagan left office in 1989. Yet, they hint around about it, they fart around about it, they futz around about it, but there's no calling him out on it and saying, Joe, maybe you're too old, maybe just one term. If you do that, you will perhaps alleviate some of the concerns of the American people. No, they aren't doing that. It's kind of weird. Anyway, Joe Biden was giving a speech. Oh, God, I don't know what he was thinking. Joe Biden was giving a speech on Sunday about race and about life. He recounted how in the summer of 1962, in the era of tail fins and, I don't know, greasers and socias, apparently, Joe Biden was talking about the summer he'd worked as a lifeguard at a local pool. Now, he was in Delaware giving this speech. And he talked about a guy named Corn Pop. I don't know what kind of self-respecting gangster would go by the name Corn Pop, but he later went on to massive fame as one of the Rice Krispie Kids, I think. I don't know how to set this up, because you can't. The jokes that I would make are nothing compared to what jokes Joe said, because he's completely serious and earnest about this. So, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Joe Biden recounting how Corn Pop was going to mess him up with a straight-edge razor the way that the kids used to make them all rusty, because he referred to him as Esther Williams, not in the words of Joe Biden, not a joke. Okay, wait. Before we hear the audio, and you've got to hear the audio. You have to hear this audio. I want to set the stage a little bit better. So I'm going to use the words of the Washington Post. And I don't often use the words of the Washington Post for anything but mockery. But, it is kind of in this case, too, because they're taking him very seriously. Their headline on this story is, Joe Biden recalls lessons he learned as the only white lifeguard at a city pool in 1962. Now, he's 20 years old at this time. Well, I guess he's 19 years old. His birthday's in November. In the summer of 1962, stretched out with possibilities before 19-year-old Joe Biden, God, he's already the hero in his own story, who was home from college in Wilmington, Delaware. Though it was the last of his teen years, he didn't spend it carousing at the local bars, wandering the sands of Rehoboth Beach, or driving to Atlantic City. Instead, he took a job as a lifeguard at a city pool in hopes of learning more about the black community. This is not a straight-up press release from his campaign, although you wouldn't know it. This is from the Washington Post. A so-called reporter named Travis Andrews wrote that. Instead, he took a job as a lifeguard at a city pool in hopes of learning more about the black community. In 1962, Joe Biden was super woke, super duper woke. He wasn't involved, in pesky little things like freedom riding or the civil rights movement. He was going to take a stand, all right. He was not going to get hammered and shit-faced in the summer of 62. Instead, he was going to watch black people swim. And that was his, that was his wokeness. His plan was successful. Of course it was. Not only was he the only white lifeguard at the Price's Run, early precursor to the Price is Right, the Price's Run swimming pool in Brown Burton Winchester Park, he was one of the only white people there at all, he wrote in his autobiography, Promises to Keep on Life and Politics. Now, 55 years later, the community has named the center housing the pool after the former vice president. A new sign on the side of the building reading the Joseph R. Biden Jr. Aquatic Center was unveiled Monday. And there's a picture of Joe Biden at the Aquatic Center. It's just a pool with he's surrounded by black children. The Post writes, Biden, surrounded by young black children in swimming trunks and one pieces, reflected on his time at the pool before climbing up a ladder to sit in a lifeguard chair, suited arms outstretched. Now, when I first saw this picture, I thought, this is Photoshop. Somebody did this as a joke. But no, he actually did it. Most notably, he learned firsthand of the struggles faced by the black community when segregation was still the law of the land, quoting Joe. Most of the people I got to know had literally never talked to a white person, he said. This is Delaware, 1962. They'd ask me questions because I was really the only white guy they really knew, and about things that just startled me. He recalled, for example, a fellow lifeguard asking if Biden had a 5-gallon can for gasoline that he could borrow for a trip to see his grandmother in North Carolina. Biden didn't ask why, said many gas stations won't serve gas to black people as they drive down the South. Then, I can't believe this crap. Then comes the story of Corn Pop. This is the way that the Washington Post reports it. Early in the summer, a gang that called itself the Romans frequented the pool. The rough gang, the Romans. They like to terrorize communities and cool off with a nice dip in the community pool. One of the gang members, nicknamed Corn Pop, was bouncing relentlessly on the high diving board, which was expressly against the rules. Biden, wanting to show that he, quote, wasn't an easy mark, whistled at Corn Pop and yelled, "Esther Williams, get off the board, man. You're out of here." Williams was a 1950s swimmer and actress best known for aquatic set pieces, and the joke was likely meant to be somewhat emasculating. Oh, Joe Biden and his early 60s toxic masculinity. The other lifeguards pointed out his mistake, though, telling him that Corn Pop would likely be waiting for Biden to walk to his car at the end of the day, and Corn Pop would probably be carrying his weapon of choice, a straight razor. Biden wanted to call the police, but Wright stopped him. If he did that, he'd never be allowed back in the community. Don't you love that? You know, we don't take kindly to people who don't like being cut up with a straight razor. You'll be ostracized, Joe. You'll never be elected to the Senate with that attitude of not wanting to be sliced up by a rusty straight razor. So Biden did as his friend suggested and wrapped a 6-foot length of metal chain around his arm, which he wrapped in a towel. I'm not really sure how that would work. Corn Pop indeed approached Biden. Now, I love how this is reported without question and without mockery. Joe Biden is the hero in this story. Corn Pop indeed approached Biden, who said, quote, "You might cut me, Corn Pop, but I'm going to wrap this chain around your head before you do." But he also said loudly for everyone to hear, "I owe you an apology. I should have never called you Esther Williams. That was wrong. And in front of all your friends, I sincerely apologize. But if you bounce on that board like that again, I'm still going to throw you out." The two put their weapons away. Joe says, "We ended up being friends. Corn Pop and the Romans looked out for me the rest of the summer." There's more, and I want to play it for you in his own words because he says it in such a rambling, ridiculous way. But if you stand up to a guy who is going to cut you, and the way Joe, he leaves a lot of details out in this Washington Post story, and you just apologize because you called him Esther Williams, they're going to look out for you all. Are you going to go back to that place? Are you going to trust them? If somebody's got that quick of a hair trigger that they're going to cut you up because you called them Esther Williams. Now, granted, it's allegedly 1962 and not Joe's fantasy land, so things were a little bit different then, but I would like to think that there wasn't this "you called me Esther Williams, now you must die" mentality back then. It seems to me like he's playing on a bunch of stereotypes. Now, one would think that a guy known for carrying a straight razor, willing to slice up and perhaps murder somebody for calling him Esther Williams, would be a known commodity in the neighborhood, wouldn't you think? You know, that guy, the gang, the Romans, and the vicious, violent Corn Pop. What? My gang name is Red Pansy Flower. That's right. You put my name on the street, you're going to get some trouble. Red Pansy Flower's here. He ain't going to take no... Corn Pop. I would think that that'd probably be my last day on the job. My experiment of my social woke tourism in the summer of 1962 would be over if three guys with straight razors confronted me and we're going to kill me. I don't care. Minimum wage was 50 cents an hour or whatever it was in 1962. I don't think that job's really worth it. Maybe Joe was super duper woke and he wanted to know what it was like in the black community. So he decided to just, I'm going to keep on lifeguarding here. You didn't cut me today, Corn Pop. So I'll see you tomorrow. And then Corn Pop, so impressed with Joe's apology in front of a couple of people, not mad at the insult in front of a bunch of people, he decides, I'm not going to kill you. Not only am I not going to kill you, Joe, I, Corn Pop, do solemnly swear that I will forever have your back in the summer of 1962. Fear not, Joe. Somebody gives you any guff, you tell them that Corn Pop and the Romans, they'll have to deal with Corn Pop and the Romans if they mess with Joe Biden. This really does sound like a really, really bad sort of ripoff version of The Outsiders, which is a really, really bad ripoff version of what life had to have been like back then. But enough of the setup. Just now that you know what to listen for, listen to Joe Biden try and tell this. Now, he's surrounded by black children while he's telling this story about Corn Pop and how Corn Pop's going to cut a bitch. You call him Mr. Williams.
I learned a lot. And I learned that it makes a difference. This was the diving board area. And I was one of the guards. And there were not a, there was a 3-meter board. And you fell off sideways, you landed on the damn, the darn cement over there. And Corn Pop was a bad dude. And he ran a bunch of bad boys. And I did. And back in those days, you show how things have changed. One of the things you had to use, if you used pomade in your hair, you had to wear a bathing cap. And so he was up on the board, wouldn't listen to me. I said, hey, Esther, you, off the board, or I'll come up and drag you off. Well, he came off, and he said, I'll meet you outside. My car, this was mostly, these were all public housing behind it. My car, there was a gate out here. I parked my car outside the gate. And he said, I'll be waiting for you. He was waiting for three guys in straight razors. Not a joke. There was a guy named Bill Wright, Mouse, the only white guy, and he did all the pools. He was the mechanic. And I said, what am I going to do? He said, come down here in the basement where mechanics, where all the pool filter is. You know, the chain, there used to be a chain that went across the deep end. And he cut off a 6-foot length of chain. He folded up. He said, you walk out with that chain. And you walk to the car and say, you may cut me, man, but I'm going to wrap this chain around your head. I said, you kidding me? He said, no, if you don't come back. And he was right. So I walked out with the chain. And I walked up to my car. And they had, in those days, you used to remember the straight razors, you'd bang them on the curb, get them rusty, put them in a rain barrel, get them rusty. And I looked at them, but I was smart then. I said, first of all, I said, when I tell you get off the board, you get off the board, and I'll kick you out again, but I shouldn't have called you. Esther Williams, I apologize for that. I apologize, but I didn't know that apology was going to work. He said, you apologize to me? I said, I apologize for that, not for throwing you out, but I apologize for what I said. He said, okay, close the straight razor, and my heart began to beat again.
Now, juxtapose that ridiculous story with the way that I told you the Washington Post reported it. Does it seem like they were completely different stories? Joe Biden speaking in half sentences, stopping and starting, changing his story, fudging some of the details. The Washington Post seems to have filled in some of the blanks there for Crazy Uncle Joe and tried to make it as coherent as possible by only taking parts of the story that Joe told and putting it in quotation marks and filling in the rest with their reporting. Oh, yes, he wrapped his arm in a chain and then put a towel over that arm. And that doesn't not really jive with what Joe Biden was saying there. He was going to call the police. Where's that part of the story? The only white guy, there's projects everywhere and they're making razors rusty. The Washington Post omits all of that stuff. Making, what are you going to do with a rusty razor? They bang it on the on the curb and then leave it in the rain bucket. What the hell's a rain bucket? Leave it in the rain bucket to get rusty. I may not kill you with this, but if I cut you, you've got a higher than average chance of getting some serious tetanus. Maybe even lockjaw, pal. So just keep that in mind. You ever kick me off a diving board and call me Esther Williams again. It's like a really bad high school play written by a freshman. Yet this is allegedly Joe Biden's life, because in the summer of 1962, rather than having fun at 19 years old, he decided he wanted to learn more about the black community and decided to be a lifeguard at the black pool in Delaware or whatever. Anybody believe this? Now, this should cause people some concern. It should cause some journalists to go, hey, let's go see if we can find any records of this corn pop character in, I don't know, police filings and anybody who was alive back then, the story of corn pop. It probably won't happen. Maybe it'll happen. Maybe one of the other campaigns will send somebody out there on the corn pop beat. But the fact that the Washington Post reported it the way I read it to you is a testament to just how screwed up not only Joe Biden's memories are and Joe Biden's life in his memories is relative to reality, but how screwed up the media is. That this guy, this reporter, Travis Andrews, could write this piece, this glowing piece, about how Joe Biden wanted to have a woke summer of 1962 rather than have fun, is what we're up against as conservatives. Ladies and gentlemen, like I said, they're only going to get crazier, and you ain't seen nothing yet. That's why you should text daily to 88022. Get on that list. Help out this show and help out your sanity. Get on the Trump campaign text list. All right, that is all the time we have for today. If you want to enter to win the Michelle Malkin book, email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Let me know that. Let me know if you text the Trump campaign, if you sign up for that. I appreciate all of it. It's Monday. It's another week underway. The weekend will be here soon enough. And in any event, we'll be back here tomorrow with another exciting episode.
If you use pomade in your hair, you had to wear a bathing cap.